Money Matters is brought to you by Petso Financial Consultants. Their team of certified financial planners have been educating their clients to build confidence and find peace with their money for over 35 years. Also by Michelle Oliver of Finance of America Mortgage, lending products for all the stages of your financial life. By HH & Associates Accounting, we aren't just accountants, we provide solutions. By Mountain West Bank, your community bank, with 8 branches in the Treasure Valley. Now, here's Dave Petso on KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and good morning. Yes, I am live right now. We'll play a little segment with Kevin Miller just a little bit later, but of course I want to open up the lines and let people know we're at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm remote, of course, and thought I might slip out, get a little warm weather in, and of course the market tips over. Be back, of course, this weekend. But at the same time, it is funny how that has happened a couple times in my many years career. Markets do that. It's frustrating, if you will, to be out of town when it does. But it happens, and it's not really fresh or new. I know the news agencies, the business press, the pundits, if you will, all want to pretend they're correct because there's money in it. There's money at stake. There's money at stake in the news business when something is happening. So it's hyped. It's very much like the analogy of that I always use, which was when the Iraqis voted. And, of course, they knew it would be a disaster. Remember that? It was a bloodbath. But the people lined up to vote anyway, and sure enough, there was some violence. And, you know, so you see the bomb crater and the blood splattered against the wall. Somebody had been killed in a bomb blast. And then if you think about that and you raise up, you know, 40 feet off the ground or pan out on the street, you'd find that there was a line of people all the way around that crater and around the building, around the block, lined up to vote. If you went up over the city of Baghdad, you saw millions of people, and it was a beautiful day, and a little puff of smoke over in a corner. But remember, it was a disaster, and for 24 hours, it just ran and ran and ran with the blood-splattered wall. It wasn't a bloodbath. There was very little violence. It went off remarkably well, but that wasn't the news. That would not be news. And when we think about that with the market, it's not news that the market goes up most days, down sometimes, and that market corrections are normal. This has to be breathless. It has to be the biggest point loss or gain. But it really, on a percentage basis, isn't really in the top 25. But, you know, it's huge news. Is this a resetting of prices? It's because of inflation. It's because of machines. It's because of this. It's because of that. Now we have to tag a meaning to every movement. As if somehow the pundits that are tagging it would have known, could have known, are now telling us how they knew this was going to happen, because here's the sequence of events that happened leading up to that. Of course, they didn't, and they don't, and no one can, but we never stop to teach ourselves to learn, or does the media help? Because they don't want to help. They want you to react to things. Otherwise, you won't tune in. There's money in it for them. The pundits have money in it to pretend that they got it right, so you'll buy their newsletters. They have money in it. The algorithms love the volatility. They love to trade in and out. So when prices move and the momentum's good, prices on the upswing are great. Prices on the downswing are great. And when you do them multiple times in a day, it's even better. You make multiples the money of a straight up or straight down move. there's money in it everywhere. But where there isn't any money in it is for investors. Do we dial it off? Do we turn it off? Or we just go, you know, I hear you, man. I know. But you know what? You've been babbling about this Pollyannish view for 30 plus years. Yes, I have. That's the big picture. And I'm not going to go into that today. Who knows what I'll go into. But I doubt it. We've talked about it a lot. The market's up most days, most weeks, most months, most years, and all long-term periods. All. And by the way, over all 30-year periods, it's outperformed the other major asset classes, all of them. When do you buy stocks? Anytime. And they'll be higher 30 years from now. Higher than any other asset that you choose. Huh. See, that's not news. There's no money to be made in trading that. There's no money to be made that just simply says, wow, how can I zip and zig and zag and in a world of social media? And here's what I look like now. And here's what I look like in 5 minutes. Here's what I look like in a week. Because everybody's so fascinated with my new haircut, my new this, my new that. And I need more money so I can buy nicer shoes. It's an awful quick world, fast-paced, and we're driven by all of that and to our investments as well. So there's money to be made in the noise, in the volatility. And now, even though I said there's no money in it for investors, there is. There really is money in it for investors. The money in it for investors is the fact that the stuff you loved last week, last month, whatever, is cheaper. But here's the bet. You won't pull the trigger. In fact, the trigger you will pull is quite probably the what do we do now trigger? What do I sell now? Now, that doesn't mean you. You probably won't do that. But collectively, people and investors do. Collectively, they do. There's more buying when stocks are high. There's less buying when stocks are low. What makes sense about that? Nothing. Nobody goes to the store and says, well, you know, I don't want to buy that right now, but call me back and I'll come pick up my merchandise when prices go higher. Never happened. Never happens. Only in the stock market. Well, you know, things are good and they're super expensive, so I think I'll buy. Oh, things are bad and now they've gotten really cheap, so I want to lose money so I can sell. I want to take my temporary losses and make them permanent. Nobody would rationally do that. So what do we do, though? Do we say, you know, this is irrational, this is crazy, I'm not going to go do this. I'm not going to do this at all. I'm absolutely not. In fact, in order to make sure that I don't do this, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure that I don't look every second of every day. I'm going to make sure that I don't push the button at home to see what my worth is for this day, because that has no relevance whatsoever to my long-term security. None. Absolutely no relevance. I don't mean a little less like 1%. I mean it has no relevance for where the market will be in 30 years. None. How much income you're going to draw the rest of your life from that greatest corporations in the world? I mean, the dividends. The dividends are raised virtually every year of your entire life at 3 times the rate of inflation, by the way. Nothing. So what I'm saying is let's behave correctly and keep us away from the emotional tug. Hey, when you push the button and your portfolio is worth less, Does that make you feel good? Or make you feel bad? Or you don't care? So here's my point. It is one of the three. You're not going to feel good when it goes down. No. But you might not care. That's very healthy. That's good. But most people begin to worry. And they certainly, at the very least, they don't like it. So if it has no relevance to the long term, why do we do it? Because we want to feel bad? Does that make sense? Because it doesn't help us behave correctly. You would never, ever, ever tell somebody what you ought to do since you're quitting smoking is keep a pack of cigarettes in your pocket. What you ought to do is go hang out at the smoking bar. You wouldn't do that because you don't want to be tempted. Why do it? If you have a good plan, you keep it. You don't contemplate if your plan's good. You don't roll around in the mud and get dirty. Why? There is no upside to fussing. None. No upside, but we do it. Why? Ask yourself, why? Why do I do this? That will help you in each correction. By the way, in this incredible bull market that theoretically has taken stocks to way too high a level, according to all the pundits now, and, you know, you should have been holding cash for the last 25,000 points, those pundits. There's been 9 10% or greater corrections. 9. Did you want to miss them? You want to miss the 380% move from the bottom? From the S&P 666 to over 2,500? Did you want to miss that? You know, because you were going to have a 10% correction. 9 of them. It's normal. One final thought. Now, we're going to talk about all these all day, I'm sure. But one final thought in this segment. Yourselves. That's where the really, really, really big money is in corrections, right? We talked about media makes money, hyping, any kind of volatility. Traders make money. The machines make money when volatility is high. Okay? And pundits get to pretend they were on the right side of the trade, or when they're on the wrong side of the trade, which they usually are, and have gone to cash and are geniuses, they now come out of the woodwork. They don't tell you that they've been in cash since 14,000 on the Dow. Bears are bears. They always come out. So all those people make money. But the ones that make the big bucks are the really scary ones. In the old days, they pushed gold. Yeah, they still do. Some do. They push precious metals. You know, the end of the world is here. We're going to scrape little gold filings off to buy our groceries at Albertsons any day now. This has gone on for my entire career. And my grandfather's life, my great-grandfather's life, it just goes on and on. All right? No point in making fun of them. It just never ends. But that's morphed into these products where you can get market participation with no risk, which you already know is a lie. But you want to believe it. That's what fear does. Fear makes people do things and be irrational. They would never do without it. You would never sell your portfolio after. You would never go run to one of these seminars to learn about how you can do something you already know isn't true. Oh, but you're going to go get educated. No, you're not. Education is not a one-sided sales pitch. Ever. It's not. And so these fear mongers really come out. This is where it gets expensive for people. This is where it gets terribly dangerous. These are the people that prey on the senior citizens. The equity index annuity people, to be kind. Put people in products that don't work, make a bloody fortune, and you can't get out of the products. Can't. But fear drives people to not ask the questions, not push, and not simply ask and say, does this make any sense? Can I have market returns with no risk? No, you can't. Period. End of story. Do professionals do use this product? No, they don't. End of story. Only sales sharps do. Unlicensed people do. They're the only ones. They're the only ones because they get paid 10% commission. It works. You don't think it works? You watch. Watch the sales explode for products that promise things they can't deliver, won't deliver ever under any circumstances. Won't do it. Only when the market goes down and you don't lose money, that piece of it is true. But you don't make anything when the market goes up. That too is true. We talked about it. And if you want more information, I broke it out here a couple weeks ago. We put it on our website, petsofinancial.com. Separated it out if you want to know some more information on equity indexed annuities, why they won't work, the sales tactics, and more. Just don't do it. But the hype and the fear, it's all about money. All about money. Pushing your money into a place that won't work in fear so that they get paid. Careful. That's where the real money is made in every normal correction. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, it's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. Now let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for holding. I appreciate it. Jim, are you there? No? Okay. Well, call us back if you will. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, like we were talking about before, fear sells. And it comes out every time. This one isn't different. I guess they're all different. They're all different for different reasons, right? We have, you know, volatility for absolutely no reason at all. Like this one. Is it algorithms? Yeah, probably some. Yeah, they like pushing it around. Is there any reason why we move, you know, like on Friday, 800 points in a day? No. Nope. Really fundamentally, things are fine. They're better than fine. Because of fear about inflation. Well, after the fact, we all have to then say this is why. We point our finger and this is why. But here's a simple truth. Markets correct. And they do it typically one time per year. But, of course, some years, like 2017, we don't have one. But 12 straight months of up. Not one 10% or greater pullback, which is crazy. I mean, the average pullback each year is like 14% from the highs every year. But you'd think in this hyper-reported world, it's just, oh, my gosh, this never happens. It's crazy. We're all going to die. Either you have a long-term perspective or you think you need to try to figure this out or you get fearful, whatever it is. Fear doesn't work. You're not a trader. So what do you do? Do you stick it out? What's the plan? That's another nice sales pitch. Does your financial advisor have a plan? What's your plan? Well, the plan shouldn't change because the market conditions change. Your plan is your plan designed to produce income, for example, designed to produce a chunk of money for college. A steady stream of income is not a, well, what happened? Now the market got cut in half. Should I just cut my income in half by selling off all of my securities? No. But why would you think that? Well, in the abstract, we don't. And that's the point, isn't it? When we're driven by fear, we start listening to people we shouldn't listen to, people we already know are full of beans. We know they are. We totally know they are. We wouldn't give them the time of day if we're thoughtful about stuff. If we realize there is no such thing as a free lunch, I know that. Then quit listening to what you know is already not true. You can't have market returns without risk. You can't. That's not true. It's a lie. Period. So as we think about that and we go through all of that, we realize that fear drives us to a lot of really poor decisions. Really poor. So we have to be thinking about and monitoring on it and understanding corrections are normal. If this is normal, then why would I overreact to normal? Well, you won't. If this is what I've been looking for to put cash to work, then do. Quit saying, because everybody does it, right? Well, it really looks bad out there. It's really volatile. I think I won't move now. And then you miss. I mean, have we seen the bottom? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Well, what do you think? I don't know. That's what I think. I don't know. But I do know that lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of stocks are 20, 25% off of their highs. Others are not. They're barely off. But broadly speaking, everything is more than 10% cheaper. Oh, well, I don't know. I think I'll wait until it gets expensive, and then I'll buy. Or I'll get this other news flash, right, you know, from some spiritual being that will let me know that when we're down 13.5, is it 15%? Or do you think you feel the same way? It looks really bad if we're down 15. No way I could invest now. And we just do, and we get stuck in that. We don't move. So we got to move. This is a great opportunity. The stuff you wanted to buy yesterday is cheaper. We'll talk about fundamentals later. Right now, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're back with us. How you doing today?
Am I on now?
You are on now. I hear you anyway. You're
well,
on.
Well, I heard the little beep this time. Anyway, well, you know, okay, first off, you did mention there's no such thing as a free lunch. And a friend of mine used that terminology a while back. It's the same thing as money doesn't grow on trees and whatever, those things. But
right.
But you were using that probably in reference to those annuities, but you could also use it into your ball game, you know. Seems too good to be true, you know. If the stock market goes up 100 days continuously, what's wrong with this picture, you know?
I mean,
It's just not right, you know. So
it is. It's not right. But it's also impossible to game that. So, yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. See, I knew we would have a correction. People then moved out. In some cases, really over 10,000 points ago.
To use, you know, one of your favorite words, noise. Right? There is too much noise out there. There's noise about two subjects: the stock market and Trump. Whatever the hell the stock market does, whatever the hell Trump does, I don't give a damn about either one of them, really. And so, I'm trying to turn off as much as possible the news altogether.
It's really, I know it needs to be. I am absolutely mystified, for example, how much time is spent on, say, whether Melania is holding Trump's hand. We didn't do this or obsess like this with Obama. It's weird. Or is this Donald Trump's real hair? Is it a pullover or a makeover? People Photoshop in weird stuff. It's so weird about nonsensical things we've gotten away from, if you will, factual or arguing about how policy should be and into personality. So you're right. Donald Trump is another.
You mentioned photoshopping, and it's the same thing as Trump's, you know, bringing up the fake news, and it's the same thing as your example of the voting in Iraq and the bomb crater that killed one person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the whole thing about the fake news. I mean, you can't. It's what they call virtual reality. You can't believe anything you see unless you see it with your own eyes, not through a a computer screen or a TV screen.
Right. True. So, and it is, it's a frustrating, difficult thing. But, frankly, we also wind up with a circumstance here. It's not just noise that pulls us away, right? It's
right.
noise that keeps us away, and it pulls us towards untrue or deceitful products like the equity indexed annuities. They won't work. They cannot work. I detailed that on 2 weeks ago. Best I could to not make it too boring, but it is a difficult subject to talk about, how it doesn't work. Because most people simply won't, Jim. They just won't accept the fact that professionals don't use the product. They're not allowed to use the product. That Warren Buffett and Goldman Sachs and all the really smart investors in the world don't use the product ever under any circumstances, and it pays massive commissions. It won't work. They can't accept that, so we have to go, well, I want that guarantee. So I really find people driven to this word guarantee as if life has some kind of guarantee. You will live to be 88 years old and die in your sleep. That's not the way life works.
How do you give people common sense? There are people you hear about that think that the stock market is guaranteed by the FDIC.
I know.
I mean, if people are stupid, maybe they just should stay out or something, you know?
Well, they have to, and that's the problem, isn't it? Because when people are or refuse to learn or say, I don't care, what do you mean you don't care? You don't care? You want to just throw away all your money? What do you mean you don't care? I mean, there's things you have to care about. I don't care about certain things in my life, but you know what? I don't want to waste time taking a shower, so maybe I'll stop showering. Well, that would probably be offensive to all the people around me. You say, well, what kind of a weird example is that? It's no different to me than saying, you know, I don't know anything about money, and I'm not going to learn anything about money. Well, that's destructive to you. You don't have to be a professional, but you have to stop and do certain things. I don't want to do taxes, but I have to do taxes. I hate book work. It drives me crazy. Absolutely. People don't even want to be around me. I don't want to be around me when I'm doing book work. Terrible. It's terrible. But we have to do things. And in investing, you have to learn some basics. Common sense, I can't teach. Basics, you can't. Quit being lazy is what I would say.
True. Well, you know, as I've talked to you, you know, I'm not conventional. It's kind of like, I know there are about 9 or 10 sectors in the equity part, and certain places like Edward Jones recommend a certain percentage, blah, blah, blah. Well,
sure.
I like the companies that I like, and as I told you, you know, I'm doing twice as well as my advisor. Well, anyway, one thing that I find it hard to do, too, is balancing, right? Like, mm-hmm. I buy a company because I like a company. Now, I don't care how much it goes up, I still like it. Well, like, for instance,
right.
Yesterday she was advising me to sell part of Adidas because, Adidas had done well. But I don't want to. So that's just me.
Right.
So,
well, you're a collector anyway. That's
am. I am. A collector of good companies. And there's nothing wrong with being a collector.
No. Ask Warren Buffett how that works. He's done pretty good collecting.
Yeah. If it's a good company and continues to be, then whether it goes down a bit or whatever, you know.
Yep.
Keep your eye on the company, not on the value of it.
The price.
The price.
Keep your eye on value, but don't watch price.
Right.
Unless you're trying to buy. All right. I got to go, Jim. Thank
take
you.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. We got to take a break for Fox News, and we're at 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Let's go to Mike in Gooding. Mike, thank you so much for holding and being patient.
Good morning, Dave. Quick question on market corrections. Why is it a decrease of 10% is considered a correction? Is there some economic science behind that? I mean, why isn't it 7%? Why isn't it 12%? You see where I'm going?
I totally do, Mike. It's a good question, and it's something, of course, that we occasionally make fun of. Like it's really not a correction if it goes down 9%, but if it goes down 10%, then it qualifies. But they have
right.
to make a number at some point, right? It's the same thing with a bear market being considered a 20% or greater decline, and those occur about once every 5 years. So corrections of 10% or greater about once a year. And when I say every 5 years or once a year, it's been since the beginning, literally 2 years out from our last correction when it ended. It was about this time of year in 2016. So that's the last time we had a 10% or greater correction. It doesn't mean anything scientifically. It's just a number that they decided that officially it's not. It's not an official correction if we don't go down 10% or more. And it never looks the same. That's the one thing that we have with our analytical thinking is, and it's not wrong thinking, it's the way we're wired, but we think of numbers as this is where it probably will be somewhere near, is a 10% correction. Not at all. You'll go for, like we did, 2 years without a correction. You'll have years where you have three of them because of volatility. And that's where we get these averages, when we get the extremes and they average out. So 10% is not a magic number. It's just a line in the sand, the same way as a bear market is a line in the sand. At 20%, that is officially a bear market in whatever commodity, oil, whatever, stock, or the whole market itself.
Okay. Well, I've always been curious on that. Everything seems to gravitate in economics towards the number of 10. So it seems kind of strange to me.
Yeah, well, it is, in this one it's 10, and like I say, bear market's 20. And also, though, there are multiple per year 5% on average. So that's another one that is people talk about often, that we didn't even have a 5% correction last year. That was a very unusual year. Now we have a lot of volatility. Maybe we're going to make up for that and have a really wild year. But again, fundamentals are good, really good, and the market is not expensive by historic measurements at all. Okay?
All righty. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your call. You have a great day.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's go ahead and go to Bob. Bob, thanks for holding. Appreciate you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question related to retirement planning. I think I read this in Morningstar. I have a hard time getting a grasp of this idea that usually in retirement planning, we're told and studies indicate that maybe you go a little more conservative with your investments, maybe a balance of 60-40, 50-50 equity to a fixed income. And that if you compare that, or as opposed to saying 70-30. But then your money will last longer that if you start with a more balanced approach and you add more equities to it as you go through the retirement or the aging process, your money will last longer. Maybe you take out 4% or 5% instead of 3 or 4%. I don't have time to understand it. Why not stay 70-30 the whole time? Is it because you start with a solid, more solid base and you know you're going to get a solid 3%? You build from there and avoid volatility. Why that suggestion of maybe you go greater equities as you go through the aging process compared to just staying there?
Right. Well, it's a great point. And what you're really pointing out here, I believe, is the, if you will, the double nature of what people are saying in this. It makes no sense. You can't, on one hand, be saying you need to come into retirement with, let's say, a 60-40 portfolio, so that you're pretty conservative, but yet when I look at the chart, I find that when I add and maybe make it 90% stocks or 100% stocks, my likelihood of success in our theoretical, what they call a Monte Carlo simulation, but in our withdrawal rate, I have more success. So it doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense to be saying that on one hand, I have a higher rate of success to pull more money out when I don't own any bonds or very few bonds, and yet you're telling me as I get older and I should put more into stocks. It is backwards. So I'm going to pose this question, though, as we have from portfolio design now for several years. Why would you ever want to own 40% of your portfolio in something that can't even earn the inflation rate? The answer is you guarantee failure. So whatever these simulations are, they're incorrect. I don't care if you run a trillion calculations. If you have wrong data, the answer is going to be wrong. And wrong data in this case is bond yields that are in excess of 5% are in the mix. when bond yields are this low and we're below 3%, the historic inflation rate, on a 10-year treasury, you are stuck in a world where it won't work. And so study after study says, hey, you can run all these simulations, but if you put 40% of your portfolio, I mean, come on, this is common sense. You can't put 40% in and draw out 4% if the 40 is only earning 3. It won't work. So having a mix, I think we also have to look at the ground conditions. And that doesn't mean you look at it in the rearview mirror and say this worked or that worked. Of course you can do that. But we have to use common sense and find other ways to stabilize the portfolio in down times, or create, in my case, we create buckets, if you will, so that you can wait out the market. You still have to have the fundamental belief that stocks will recover, that dividends will get paid. And that's all. You don't have to believe it's the best market days ahead. You don't have to know that the GDP is growing by 4%. You don't have to know any of that. You have to believe the one thing that's always been true. Markets come back and go to all-time highs. Great corporations of the world raise and increase their dividends consistently over the decades. That's what you have to believe. And then I would say in this day and age with low interest rates, you create as much as you can from stocks and let them grow. And you have a very small reservoir to sustain during downtimes if you're pulling out more than 3%, which is fairly easy to generate 3%. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, Bob. I'm guessing it's a very broad question, but what else do you have?
So, going into retirement, a little more balanced or not necessarily? Depends on how you look at your risk and your comfort level.
I think it's a comfort level more than risk, because I don't know how long you've listened, but
Since the beginning.
We have to define risk. What's that?
Since the beginning.
Okay.
I've been listening.
And you know I talk about this definition, and thank you for listening for that long. I believe that we focus our risk level as price, and price is not relevant long term. I want to focus or refocus my thought about how risky a portfolio is, not on today's price change, but on the ability that portfolio has to maximize my income or whatever my goal is for the rest of my life. What is the best chance I have to have a little bit of money left over when I'm gone? What is the best way to build that portfolio? Is it always a 60-40? No. Mm-mm. Is there a mathematical formula? Of course not. But the best formula that I know of is to generate enough income from your portfolio that you have what you need now, and then price is irrelevant. Does it really matter if your cash flow is stable and keeping up with inflation? Does it really matter what the price is? And then pull us away from that price. So when you say risk, my own personal risk level, let's redefine that. The risk is that you're going to run out of money before you run out of life. That's for most people what it really is. But everybody, the media, us personally, human beings, our human nature drives us to say the risk is what the price moves today. That's not the risk. That's not. We've got our eye on the wrong thing. Like the magician says, is waving his left hand to get your attention in his left hand while his right hand's doing the trick. We are watching the wrong thing. We watch price and define our risk from that. Wrong. It moves us in the wrong direction. So set your objective in place, which is I want a rising stream of income all the days of my life that I can't outlive. That's for most people is the risk. And then you define that, and how is my portfolio doing about creating a rising income? Because you're not trying to sell today.
Yeah, and I like that idea. I've used that bucket approach, and it's nice to take some winnings off the table when you're able to, or dividends, and have that ready for when you need it.
Exactly. Great. Good. Hey, thank you again. Appreciate your patience
hanging
on. You have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we've got to take a quick break, our final one this hour, and we will be right back. Hello, and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. not this station, broker dealer, nothing. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, 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 or sell, sell, sell. None of that. Nonsense anyway. That's just, quotes, entertainment, although I think it, noise is not entertaining any more than you think that just a bunch of incorrect news or made-up stuff is a good idea to follow. Because that's what it is. Making up news isn't helpful. It's not. It doesn't help us. Fear sells. And so out they come, the Wall Street casino. Here we go. Here's what the casino is. If you want to think of it as a casino, fine. But the odds are in your favor. You are the casino. You're not the player. You're the casino. The longer you play, the more assured you are of winning. See, the shorter you play as a player, a gambler, if you will, then the vagaries of luck can come into play. You can get struck by lightning, right, and get a royal flush. But over the long haul, getting a royal flush or not, the casino's going to grind away and win. You see, in the market, we see things as risk in the wrong place, and I want to help us define that. It was a great question, Bob. Thank you. And I think I'm going to run with that just a little bit here and talk about the definition of risk. If we only define risk as price movement, we miss it. Then we feel like we need to find a magic something to stop that price movement because that stops the risk. The pain of a temporary, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives, correction. It's certain. It will happen. It's temporary. Get over it. But we can't. We won't. We don't really want to try. We want to believe that there is something out there that will take away the how we define risk, which is price movement. Not that I'm going to run out of money, not that my goals and objectives in life, whether it be I want to endow my university, I want to travel the world, I want my grandkids to all be educated. I want to leave this legacy, this charity, this, that. These are my goals. Or maybe it's something like almost everybody. Hey, if there's stuff left over, great, groovy. But I want to educate my kids. I want to do all that, my grandkids. But I also want to make sure that I have cost of living adjusted income all the days of my life, no matter how long I live. That kind of is a basic human goal. Isn't that the risk? But why do we want to take it down to the risk? Why? Because we feel like as human beings, we have to define everything. We have to figure out a way to define it, to put it in the right box. And when we put it in the right box, we can put a mathematical formula on it. What are my chances of success if I design a portfolio that is 60% this and 40 of that, or 70 of this and 30 of that? And what if I add 5 of this? And we get caught up in these endless searches for proof that somewhere, somehow, something in life is certain, other than, of course, death and taxes and blah, 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 right? We need that. We're compelled for that. But if we don't define what we're looking for correctly, and we don't define risk correctly, we get driven the wrong direction, don't we? Or we can. And don't think you're above it. I'm not either. It's a simple fact. I don't like it. I don't like losing 10%. Do you? No, I don't. But when I look at the scheme of things, A, I'm still working. I don't care. I really don't. My net worth went down. Well, let me see. Okay, so my net worth went up. Let's just put a number on it. 30% since Trump was elected. I mean, it doesn't have to be exact. I'm going to give back 8 of that. So basically, since he's been elected, it's 20% gain. Okay? 20 plus. 2025. But, or I can define the risk as that last drop. Yep, I just lost a lot. Lost a bunch. As an email I'll be talking about here in a little bit, point out, ouch, ouch. Yes, if we define the risk as only that part, ouch, is right. International stocks even took a bigger beating, right? Weren't they the cheap ones? Pow! Oh, yeah, the pundits were wrong. Weird. They're almost always right. Well, when you hear them, you might think they are almost always right, and they're not. They're not. Can't predict the future. But if we don't define risk correctly, we run in the wrong directions. It is important to get it right. We have to understand, what is our goal? And the risk is not achieving that goal. So how do we increase our percentage of success in reaching our goal? And the answer always is, even mathematically, if you want a formula, if you need a formula, if you're an engineer, accountant, or actually most human beings, we need formulas. We think analytically, and you've got to come back into that box at least with some numbers. Okay? If you want a higher success on a classic Monte Carlo simulation, you add in more stocks. Okay? And I can't prove to you, unless you accept the simple fact, that risk is defined as me not achieving my goals. If you want to talk about price, I that's it. I don't know how to do that. I don't. I don't know how to redefine your risk is only in price movement. Because if you want to do that, then you're going to be a sucker for the equity index annuity pimps. You are. They'll lie to you, and you'll accept it, even though you know it's a lie, because you're mostly worried about price movement, not success. You don't want success. You want no price movement. So when we redefine it, and we redefine it correctly, we have to fight that battle ongoing. This isn't easy, because nobody likes it. I don't either. But when you stop and you think and you go, okay, now wait a minute. So some of those, let's say you're on income, which is really those are the ones, the only ones that should ever be worried about a market correction. You should love market corrections if you're investing in your 401k every month. Why you'd want to always pay more, I don't know. Honestly, it makes no sense. I mean, I do understand. But why? I don't know. It's a drug, right? I'm worth more money. Look at me. I'm a bigger man because I'm worth more money. Big guy over here. See my 401k balance? Mm-hmm. That's how manly I am. Okay, now that may sound silly, but it is clearly human nature because why would I want, when I'm 40 years old and going to work for another 20 or 30 years, why would I ever want to pay more for something? Why? I want prices come down so I can be buying at lower prices, accumulate more shares for the same money. But we don't feel that way. So you see, it's really about our feelings and getting them right. Defining fear correctly, or risk correctly, excuse me. Defining risk correctly, it's important. It's not just a thing. Otherwise, we get fussed about the wrong things. You know, almost every problem we have in our life is a little one. It's tiny. There really are no problems. But good Lord, you would think we lived in the worst of times. This is horrible out there. The nation's divided, or this whining and that whining. Oh, the poor people, the poor people. The poor people, we don't even have any poor people. The only people that are poor are the people down there at the rescue mission that don't have a home, that are dealing with various, because all of them are, mental issues or addiction issues. Jobs are plentiful. Money's plentiful. The world is growing at a very fast pace. Technology makes our lives easier and better every single day. And yet the misery index, as I would define it, is people's all hyped up about whether Donald Trump's hair is real. All hyped up about some tweet. All hyped up about something that helps feed our political bias on the right or the left. Oh, yeah. Yeah, tax cuts aren't going to work. Yeah, they are. It's an economic fact. They will work. Corporations are going to grow even faster. Jobs will tend to stay where the tax rates are lowest, where the government intervention is the lowest. Period. Sorry, that's the way it is. But my political bias will find some way of saying, no, that isn't true. Mm-mm. Raising taxes is a good idea. Bias will do that, but it does it on both sides. And when we get stuck in a fear place, when we define risk incorrectly, and we can't open up our minds to the idea that this is not what my risk is. My risk is not achieving my goal and staying focused on our goal. If you're trying to lose 50 pounds, is it game over if you gain 1 pound after losing 30? Do you pull back? You had a bad week? That's it. We're done. That's it. We're done. I'm out of here. Bring the donuts. Where do we get back on? How do we define? What are you trying to succeed at? That's what's important. Because that is a simple fact. The fundamentals are strong, stronger than they've been in over a decade. Can you imagine that? We're done with muddling through. Finally, the Fed's balance sheet is starting to shrink. And you would think that that was just, it's all phony. It's not phony at all. Not phony at all. Corporate profits are at record levels. Period. Dividends. Record levels. Corporate profits, again, are growing at amazing levels to record levels. Yeah, it's really super confusing how the market could have been up over the last few years. It's all Fed injected. No, it's not. That's the fear mongers. That's the people that I wasn't really wrong telling you to stay out of the market for 400%. Yeah, I wasn't really wrong. Excuses for missing are excuses. You missed. Are you going to miss the rest? That's why these times are just a simple little test of the fact of whether we are watching and keeping our eye on the right things or the wrong things, whether we define risk correctly or incorrectly. Are we driven to yet another equity indexed promise that won't work? That's why it's important to get it right. What are your goals? And how do we define risk? How do you define risk? Are you an investor or a trader? Because if you're thinking about changing something, you're more of a trader than an investor, or you're being driven that way. Back away from the TV, back away from the screen, any screen. Back away from the noise. And ask yourself, how do you define risk? If you couldn't see a price for the next 10 years, what would you be looking for? Cash flow? Maybe. Dividends? Income? Maybe. I think that's what most people would. If you couldn't look at price for the next 10 years, you would think of it like you were running a business, but you don't get to run this one, do you? You're not allowed to. You don't have to. You don't have to do anything. You have to do zero. Zero. And you have full liquidity. That's the dangerous part. Instead of defining it like a business that, you know, in the next 10 years, why would I care about the price? I'm not selling. You wouldn't. As a matter of fact, you would never pay somebody to come and appraise it once a year. Why would you? Until you're ready to sell. So the only question is that business generating good cash flow? Is it growing? If the answer is yes, well, why do we care about price? The answer is because we are looking at the wrong thing all the time, and we can't stop it. So once again, final thought before we take a break. How do you define risk? How are you defining it? Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. I have to take a break. Please do give us a call And if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, if you have any questions during the week, obviously give us a call. That's at petsofinancial.com, petsofinancial.com. Also there you will find podcasts and some new podcasts. Jennifer Stone and Erica Munch are getting in, are getting into some podcasts for basics, beginners. 10 minutes, something like that on some basics. Just to get people up and give them an idea, because it is so hard. We do not know. I can't go on this rant. We're not going to have time for it today. But we don't teach economics. We don't teach capitalism. We don't teach the market at all in school. Yeah, I know. Education is a complete mess right now. It's just an absolute mess. And everybody's got a, thing to complain about all the time. Mine, of course, is going to be on the economics side. Why we stop teaching economics when it's just so important to understand some of these principles, I'll never know. Well, I think I do know, but it's just probably for another time. If we don't teach economics, then you know what? It's just a bad, bad situation if people are driving us away from our roots of capitalism. But anyway, we'll talk about it another time. Let's get on to some emails. Dave, I would imagine your phone is ringing off the hook from worried investors. I've lost a good bit over the past 7 days. Hopefully the correction is about over. We'll be commenting on this on your Saturday program. And also, this is a comment. Let me rephrase. I think we have seen irrational exuberance over the last several months. Investors are beginning to shift their money to bonds as interest rates go up. Is that correct? Have a good weekend. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. Appreciate your comments and questions. Now, I would imagine the phone ringing off the hook. For number one, it's not too bad. Not too bad. Corrections are normal, and I think our clients are great regarding that. They don't lose their minds. Some do. Some do. And some people, sometimes you just can't teach. You can't make it right. You can't ever get them calmed down or understand that corrections are normal. But most people do, and it's just you have to kind of go through that process. So I think you'd be surprised that most investors, not just ours, most investors understand that corrections are normal. And obviously losing money, that's a statement that really is just like, I made this much, I lost this much. Nah, it's not like you're making and losing. It's just if you were to cash in, that's where you're at right now, okay? And I think that's an important thing to hang on to. We don't know if the correction's over. Don't know at all. I don't know. The other thing is, I'm not sure that we're irrationally exuberant at all, other than to say that if you want to look at this index or that, people have been saying that investors were really too optimistic for a long time, that prices were too high for many thousands of points. This doesn't make them right. And the fact of the matter is, as I talked about earlier, I don't think prices are too high at all. Looking at it on a historic basis, they are not. They are not. We have double digit. I mean, what are we looking about? We've got most of the companies in the S&P 500 already reported, and earnings are up 17% from this time frame last year. 17. They're exploding. GDP looks like core GDP is growing at 4%. This is incredible. This is going to be incredibly profitable, and we haven't even accounted for what the decrease in taxes are going to do. And the multiplier effect of that, it's fundamentally looking good, really good out there. I appreciate it, Paul. And you're right, though. Bonds, shift to bonds as interest rates go up. Yeah, that's some of that. But I'm not sure if people think their interest rates are going up, that people really are shifting to long-term bonds as much as avoiding them, to be frank. Because if interest rates move from 2.8, where we are now, up to 3.5, the bond you buy today at 2.8, it's not looking so good. It's not looking so good at all. The bond you buy at 3 on the way up to 4, you just got crushed on. So right now is probably not the time to be buying long-term bonds. In fact, investors are shifting the other way. So thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Let's go ahead and do one more before we have to head off to Fox News. If one is not 100% in stocks, where should one look in fixed income to generate income in retirement right now? Mike, good question. That's a tough one, and I think we're going to have to put this one off to maybe another time. I will give you a quick once over. But one of the things that we have done over the past couple of years is move in the market, if you will, in mutual funds that invest in real estate because they have good yields. So we're picking up a decent yield as a bit of a bond substitute in that area because they're not highly correlated with the market. In addition to that, there are some business development companies like KKR and stuff like that. Again, I'm not pitching KKR by any stretch, but there's many, many of them out there that are at or below their book value and are paying out all of their income the way REITs do as, again, a income generation. We're in a world that has no income generation. Then the final one that I would look at there is floating rate notes, which their name kind of indicates it. The interest rate goes up as rates go higher. You have to be careful there, but that is a better, in my mind, and certainly has been, a better fixed income substitute. But the best place, in my mind, to generate long-term fixed income is in stocks. Their income has been, in recent years, higher than the 10-year Treasury, even on the whole. And certainly when you focus on dividend-paying stocks, you get much more. And even more importantly, that has grown 3 times the rate of inflation over the years. A 9% growth rate in dividends from the S&P 500 is nothing to sneeze about. It's a big deal. It's a big income generator. We just think of stocks as prices of those stocks and capital gains, and we miss the income story. Appreciate it, Michael. We've got to take a quick break for Fox News here, and we will grab some more emails and hopefully phone calls on the other side. It's 580-5436-580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is the number, 580-KIDO. Obviously talking about volatility. It's back. It's back. Do we step aside? Do we actually dive in? Well, you know what? You dive in, but people won't. They'll step aside. I know. They just won't. They won't. Because it always looks bad, and it always looks like something. You feel like a fool. You buy in when something's down 6%, you've been waiting for it, and then bam. Because when the market's down 5 or 6%, there's stocks out there that may be down 15 or 20. So is some stocks or sector or whatever that's reacting very poorly, very poorly. Think in energy right now, huge correction, big sell-off in energy, right? As oil kind of topped out of the mid-60s and went back to 60. Big deal, not much of a fall, right? But it's enough to give people a reason to get out, get out. And so you see that in different sectors. But the problem is pulling that trigger because we feel foolish. When you buy something at a 5% discount, it goes to 10. Well, you fool. You fool. But if it's good merchandise, good merchandise. A price break, take it. Stop trying to game it. That's what keeps people out. It's a bummer, but they really do. So let's go ahead and take a look here at, it's an interesting email here. Mike, thanks for sending this. Dave, 33 years ago, I bought a small whole life policy. The illustrations the agent gave me indicated that in 30 years, the policy would be worth $100,000. Well, 33 years later, it's worth $22,000. I actually noticed that the expected return was falling far short of the predicted return soon after I bought it. Why did I hold on? It is a reminder to never make that stupid mistake again. Thanks for spreading the word. Mike, I appreciate it. And I just can't help it. I can't help it as far as these equity index annuities. Insurance is the answer to wealth. It's not. But I will say that insurance, of course, is a big part and an important thing in people's lives. But these equity index annuities that don't work, they're just horrible. And that really ticks me off. And I know that's what you're talking about. And yes, it is frustrating to see and know that policies that were written 20 and 30 years ago are not paid up as it looked like they would be. They're not. And the money I was going to have in them, it's not there. It's not. And I know interest rates have fallen mightily and insurance companies are stuck. But the reality is an illustration of what might be is nothing more than an illustration. The reality is often very, very different. So appreciate that, Mike. And let's see, we got one more here. Do you think we have had enough volume blowout to indicate a bottoming? I see some of my quality stock holdings are at nice levels to add to. Joe, Joe, thank you. I don't know, you know, about the volume blow-offs and things like that. Yes, when you have big down days and then they rip higher at the end like they did on Friday, that often indicates a blow-off bottom. It does. But you can only see them in hindsight. I don't know. Don't know if some other piece of news will come out or some algorithm will start sending the market down and then more algorithms pile on in a momentum type of a trade. Don't know. That's just the unknown. When do I get in? When do I get out? These are always the problem. They always are. And so I don't try to guess whether we've had a volume blow off or not. I know that you have a gift. This is a gift. And for those people that are in income portfolios, it's okay. You know, it's all right. That money's been set aside. That income is still being generated. Nobody's cut their dividends because of price movement. Nobody. Nobody. Unless you're selling today, there's no reason to even look. I know we do. We all do. But no reason to look. And some of the quality, this is the beauty here. These are some of the quality holdings that people can add to. Wow, wow, wow. What a gift. What a gift corrections are when we see them correctly. And I think you do, Joe. So thank you. I appreciate that. Hey, we do have to take our final break. We're going to go ahead and go back to that recording here the last 10 minutes with me and Kevin. But we've got plenty of time left today when we come back from this break to take your calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome. Hey, a couple final thoughts before we go to taping here with Kevin and I from earlier this week. You know, it is awful easy for us to get wound up and be looking at the wrong thing, looking at the magician's wrong hand, listening to the wrong things, having the wrong concerns, if you will, defining risk in an incorrect way, a way that takes us away from what our goals, our objectives are, our stated goals, not mine for you, yours for you. What is your goal? Anyway, and that's what is difficult, I think, during these times is to think of it and like, yeah, you know what it is. It's just normal. This is what happens. No reason to freak out. And there really isn't. There really is not. But it is a very natural and human thing to do so. I get that. But when we're in it, it's no time to start changing your plans. Remember these things, okay? Just real quickly, things we touched on today. Because I think it can just be those little touchstones we need from time to time to help us hang on. Remember that fear sells, and it really does in every way possible. And hyperactivity, hyperventilating thought about from the reporters, from the news networks, those kinds of things. It makes money for them. Viewers don't show up when things aren't out of control in people's minds. They want something from the media. So the media loves it. Loves it. So from the media. Then the pundits, they love it. They get their time. They get their time, and then they get famous, and then people send them money. Doesn't make them right. And they pretend to be right. Yeah, I had this correction all along. I've been holding cash since, well, the Dow was at 10,000. So I'm a genius. No, they're just wrong. Wrong. Remember, we've had nine corrections in this bull market alone. A correction being defined as a 10% or greater decline. Nine of them. Fear sells. And worst of all, here they come. You don't want to be part of the Wall Street casino. You want to make money in up markets and down markets and not lose. Not true. Can't win. Don't do it. It's just a fear trade. We've got to avoid fear. We have to define our risk, what it is we're trying to do, and stick to your goal. Stay there. Don't redefine what has always been your goal. Don't. Understand this. Good news is good news. It really is. Growing GDP is good. The Fed raising interest rates in a normal and becoming more normal and natural, that's good. That's not bad. Inflation is not out of control. It's okay. things are good. Jobs are growing. Wages are growing. This is good. This is not bad. And disruptions, corrections are totally normal. It's been 2 years since we had one. One per year is normal. All right. Hey, stay tuned for Kevin and I, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
And let's go to Dave Pezzo from a mysterious yet undisclosed location around the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. It's good to hear your voice. I missed you on Monday.
We missed you. It sounds like it's early wherever you are.
Yeah, I'm in Hawaii, and yes, it's super early. It's crazy. It's 3 hours time difference. Well. But hey, I can't sleep anyway, so why not?
Well, we all thought of you when the markets sadly hit a bump in the road, then recovered, then a lot of turbulence. You're there in Hawaii, probably meeting with Buffett or Bill Gates or Paul Allen or somebody. And all of a sudden, this happens. What's going on in your mind?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. First of all, as we've always said and talked about, Kevin, corrections happen. That's part of what the market does. This one was more severe than you would have expected, right? You would have expected a few down days, but 1,100 points is a pretty seriously bad market day. And you couple that with what happened on Friday, and then you knock off our opening yesterday down over 500 points, and you have a pretty serious downturn. Yeah, it's not a market crash. It's not in the top 10 or anything like that, but it's a pretty serious move. You have to start asking yourself why in the world the market moves that quickly when we've been dealing with really low volatility. And, of course, there are multiple answers, and nobody can pinpoint anything exact. But the thing that always bothers me in this day and age and has for a long time are the machines. And with all the machine trading, markets can move very quickly in whatever direction all those algorithms are set up to move. So if we have rising interest rates and the algorithm says sell, 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 then what you're going to end up with is a massive bunch of selling. And I think that's exactly what happened. Fortunately, the market caught itself. Interest rates stabilized. And here we are, because we're really dealing with, on a fundamental basis, an economy that's doing incredibly well and has no reason to be selling off. But here we are, and hopefully we are going to be seeing more stability. Obviously, the market opened nicely this morning, quietly, and hopefully that'll calm things back down some more.
Hopefully, but what about the reaction to it from the media and from people that, you know, on one hand, it's amazing to me because the market has had such an incredible ride. And okay, so you lose 1,000 points, but that was like a week ago, like 3 weeks ago, you gained 1,000 points. So I don't really understand the panic considering the enormous amount of gains that we've seen since the election of Donald Trump.
I don't think there is. I think, number one, this is part of the problem with our president, if you will, that he wants to take credit for lots of things. Then the people that are sick and tired of, because they lost, are really angry at him anyway. And so they can't get over it, and they want to take shots at him. So it's an opportunity to open that door. So the media piles in the anti-Trump door as if he puts his finger on the market up or down daily, and that kind of silliness goes on. And then you really do have people rooting against it, rooting against the economy, and that would be most all of the press. They can't understand why, when you get out of business's way, people work harder. They grow their businesses, they expand, and as you and I talk about all the time, the animal spirits come out and the economy booms. And we're not even talking about tax credits or tax cuts taking effect yet. So I think there's a lot of the whole, we're kind of rooting against this, number one. Number two, hey, you're in the media, you know what happens, the slate gets cleaned up every day. There is no news to report except what happens in the world. And when something like a 1,000-point market move happens, we have something to report. Hopefully tomorrow a plane will fall out of the sky, a bunch of babies will die somewhere, and we have something else to report. But today it's the stock market, and that's the focus. And I'm not sure that individual investors are panicked yet. We haven't seen that at all, and I don't suspect we will.
And back to Dave Pezzo. So where do we go from here?
Well, it's, of course, the million-dollar question, and nobody knows.
And that's really the point of investing. If you knew day to day, then you would be a trader. You wouldn't be an investor. You would just be trying to zip in and out of the market. And you can't do that. Nobody's done that successfully. There was a few traders somewhere on the New York Stock Exchange years ago that had information others didn't. But the reality is that for long-term investors, this is a buying opportunity for those stocks that they've decided they would like to own but would love to own at lower prices. We got that price break. And where we go from here, I would suspect we'll have a bit of a hiccup here somewhere. I don't think we go straight back up. That would be unusual, not completely without history to make a V-shaped recovery. But this is what's been happening as the market goes down and people keep looking for it to go down worse. It does not, and it rockets higher. It did that in the very beginning of 2016. Where the market for 6 weeks sold off 12% and then just ripped higher until we had Brexit. And that was the last time we've had any kind of reasonable volatility in the market. So I would look for things to settle down, Kevin, but it's not straight up from here. People have gotten their, if you will, the market goes up every single day. That's been stopped. And I think that kind of momentum is going to be stopped for a little bit.
Well, what do we attribute that to? I mean, is it higher interest rates? Is it Yellen poisoning the tank? I mean, is it objective or is it just a mixture of many things, Dave?
I think it is. That's a great question, Kevin. I think it's many things. But I think the key element right now is interest rates and the concern. And again, I know this is so hard for everybody. It's hard for me. Good news is good news, but not always to the market. Good news can be bad news. And when we have an economy that's doing very, very well, and Yellen poisoning, well, I suppose, Alan Greenspan famously said we were in a bubble, you know, 10,000 points before we finally had a market break. It was absurd. He called it irrational exuberance at the time. Yellen doesn't know anything about the stock market. She's a Federal Reserve chairman, and nobody can predict the market anyway. But to say the market is overvalued when there are no other alternatives in the world that aren't even more overvalued is kind of a crazy statement, frankly. Money's going to go somewhere. So we take a valuation of a market that, well, it's not low, okay? So we take a little bit of a low valuation, although I think it's fair given where interest rates are, but it's not low. And then we combine that with rising interest rates, and you have algorithms in the trading platforms that tell you we have to sell when interest rates go higher. And that was the key, and I think we just got a pile of futures selling because markets don't sell off 1,000 points in an hour. They just don't do that, not on fundamentals. That's machines, and that's just sell, sell, sell. And that's what I think happened, Kevin, is that the machines just took it down, and we went, wow, what was that? And it was rough, and then the market caught itself the next day and ripped higher, also probably on some of those algorithms. But good news of the economy booming, period, is good news. Corporations are going to make more money. You and I are going to make more money. We're going to spend more money, and that means corporations are going to make even more money. Tax reform isn't even in this picture yet, and so corporations are going to make a lot more money. The world economy is on fire, like we haven't seen in years. That brings out inflation fears, interest rate fears, and that, I think, is what's getting people upset right now in the market.
Our great friend Dave Pezzo, we appreciate you. Safe travels, and say hi to Don Ho.
Will do, Kevin. Thank you. I appreciate it. You have a great rest of the day yourself. Thanks.
Thank you. Our great friend Dave Pezzo joining us, Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial.